say you shalt me.
I have no idea what you're singing.
It's Phantom of the Opera.
I've actually never seen or listened to Phantom of the Opera.
That's fine.
I don't like Andrew Lloyd Webber.
I don't mind Andrew Lloyd Webber. I think Phantom is spectacle for spectacle's sake.
And that's his most critically acclaimed work.
Here, let me give you a plot breakdown of Phantom of the Opera. Girl works in opera. Girl finds guy stalking her in opera.
Yep.
Oh, he is a mysterious pretty man. Guy leads...
Also ghost?
Also maybe ghost? Guy leads her down to dungeon. Shows him ugly face. And then she's like, no, I don't want that now. That's fucking dumb.
That's it?
And then she runs away.
That's it.
And then he dies, but he doesn't.
Okay.
Welcome to the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast, the only Survivor podcast that's full of sticks. I got a stick for you, Jared. Stick here, stick there. Play it as an idol. Play it as a hat. Play it as the door opener. I'm your host, Stephen Levine, with my co-host, Jared Sheldon. Jared.
I kept thinking about jumping in, especially with a sexual innuendo about where you could put your stick.
Where do you want to put your stick?
Oh, my.
Jeff's going to put it in the fire.
Oh, my. But you just kept going, and I wanted to see how long you would go.
Yeah.
Apologies to our listeners.
How far I would go with my stick.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, sorry, keep going.
Apologies to our listeners if I sound weird this episode. I don't know that I will. I am getting over a cold, so I might sound congested and kind of gross, but we'll see.
You sound congested, but you don't sound, like, miserable. We'll see how we go in, like, 30 minutes.
Yeah, right. I have done nothing the last few days except, I mean, I worked from home, but, like, done nothing but taken edibles and played Nier Automata.
Oh, okay. Was it fun?
It's a very good game. I had never played it before. It's been on my list for forever. And I was like, I need something new that's going to distract me.
That's the waifu robot ladies, right?
The kind of, yes.
Okay, just making sure.
The main character is waifu robot lady, kind of. It's a weird game, man. I saw some Let's Players I really like do a Let's Play of the original Nier, like before, I think Automata was even announced, maybe like right around the time it was announced. In that game, they remade recently, I think it's called Nier Gestalt. But the first game was bad. Like, the story in it and the world building was really good, but playing it apparently felt bad.
Impressive that they got a sequel then.
Yeah, well, it's one of the weirdest games in terms of, like, its lore and its series. Because it started as, like, the, I think, Drakenwald series, and then the Xbox 360 one, Nier, and then Nier Automata. But, like, in order to get the full story of Automata, you have to play all those old games and Nier. And then there's a bunch of multimedia stuff, including, like, a time-limited, like, partnership with FF14. Where it's, like, they didn't just put, like, bonus stuff in there. There's real fucking story in there. And a stage play. That only existed in Japan.
This sounds like some bonkers Kingdom Hearts bullshit.
Kind of. But it stands alone really well on its own.
Okay.
How's your week been, Steven?
It was all right. Went to a show last night. Went to Fun Home here in Chicago.
Hey, fun fact about that show. It's not fun.
It's pretty depressing, actually. Yeah. Talking about... I mean, it's a coming-of-age story, but also it's overlapped with a I'm not my father, and also my father killed himself.
Yeah, spoilers for Fun Home, I guess.
Yeah. They say it in the first 5 minutes, so, like, true. I don't feel too bad about spoiling that one.
Yeah. I think it's slightly autobiographical, too.
Yeah, it's from a graphic novel.
Yes.
Is what they built the musical about.
Which, that's pretty cool. Usually musicals are, like, movies or books or something like that. You don't hear very many graphic novels getting turned into musicals.
We had a project in I think it was a theater management class that I was in college, where it was like, build a show, like create a show that you want. And I was like, all right, let's get weird with it. And I made a Scott Pilgrim musical.
I think that'd work really well.
I think it would too.
Do a punk rock musical, and you could do it more similar to the animated show than the movie, or like fuck with the source material to make it not quite so manic pixie dream girl, like problematic type of, I guess more cringy than problematic at times.
Sure.
There's some stuff in there that didn't age well in terms of just like you watching, you're like, ah, oh, that's dumb fan service that could be executed better and would just be better.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, I love that.
You want to take it up with that, take it up with the entire anime community while you're at it.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Fan service is a problem. There's a lot of it. And every show that I'm like, oh, this isn't going to have that, always does. It's in there somewhere.
You can have a limited amount that is still good. And also, fan service doesn't have to inherently be sexual. Sometimes fan service is, like, using Attack on Titan, my favorite show, as point of reference, like, Levi going and like going after the Beast Titan. Like, that is entirely fan service.
You're right. Or just, like, two people that you're like, they're destined to be together, and then you're like, yeah, okay, now they finally do it. Not do it, but, like, because, okay. Well, I've worked myself into a corner here.
Like, three or four times so far today.
Yeah. I just live in the corner now.
That's Steven in the corner. I don't know how the rest of the words go now.
That's me in the corner. That's me in the spotlight. Losing my religion.
I am directing a show that we just closed auditions for that takes place in 2008. And I'm so fucking excited to make the pre-show playlist. Because it's just going to be My Chem and Fall Out Boy and Paramore and all that angsty shit.
What a fun thing for you to be like, I'm just going to build a playlist, and that's what I'm excited about for this entire musical. Not musical, show.
Show, yeah, play. I'm excited for a lot of things, but that is just, that's my fan service. That I get to just build a pop punk emo playlist for the pre and post show.
You know what? Why not? You know what else? Why not? Emails.
Sure.
Not my cleanest. If you want to email us, feel free to do so, survivortbt@gmail.com, or you can message us on Reddit, u/survivortbt, or on Patreon, you can send us a message there. Had a few emails coming through this time. First one from Connor. Connor's episode 7 email. Connor says, even though she may not say the most socially appropriate things, a lot of the times Kathy is someone who always has been one of the nicest people to fans and more. It saddens me to see what could have been if she wasn't afraid to tell the producers of her Zoloft use in order to get on the show. Being on the same medication for 20 plus years, myself, going off it for a day can make your brain like go into a million directions. Kathy was going to use the machete on her fingers to get out of the game.
What?
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
And Eliza had to stop her. Wow. I hope if anyone has any mental health issues that they know they have support out there. I feel like Kathy felt helpless since she was close with Penner and Chet and they both left and she knew Tracy was going soon. How far do you think Kathy could have gone if she was on her Zoloft?
Well, and thank you for the email.
There's yeah. More, but I'm gonna pause there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's kind of why I called that a medevac. Because that was not her being like, I can't do this anymore. That was her brain having not like a lack of the chemical she needed so, so desperately from years of being on the medication. I mean, I kind of said in the episode, I don't think she's ever a threat to win the game, but she is like, she could go anywhere because she's not someone you have to get rid of, but she's not someone that's a force in the game. So right. It really depends on which alliance she falls into. And she seems to gravitate towards people on a personality basis. Like you said, she was really close to Penner. She only knew Penner for like 2 days. But she gravitated towards him. So if she gravitates towards the right people just by like the way they click, yeah, she could make it to the final three. I don't think she wins, but she can make it to the final three. Otherwise, she just kind of goes home as probably the last or second to last member of her alliance.
Yeah. I think the true answer is she doesn't get on the show if she's on her Zoloft. Unfortunately, I wish the show would just be like, hey, it's a pill, whatever, just take your pill. And
are they better about that nowadays?
No.
They don't want you to, they can't, like, no SSRIs, no nothing?
I can't say that for a fact, but okay. I think you would not make it past casting. From what I know of, like, pulling people from the game, like, oh, hey, you're gone from the game. But, like, what do I know? Maybe they do and people just don't talk about it because that's not a thing that is a part of the game. It's just a person living their life.
Yeah. We have to remember this is 2008. Like, mental health medications are way more stigmatized then than now. Like, no wonder Kathy felt so isolated. She probably, like, there's a chance that no one else in this game was on depression medication, or at least like it wasn't a conversation. It wasn't something you could bring up and be like, I'm struggling because of this. Like, you'd get labeled as a psycho.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm sure she was struggling because if she admits it, like, she might be evac'd right then and there.
That too.
She might not get any sort of money that she is entitled to.
Yeah. God. Well, thank God for Eliza.
Yeah. Thank you, Eliza, for preventing any actual problems. I personally think she could have made it to the mid-merge. I'm going back to Connors.
Oh, and you meant in this. Sorry, I was talking about, like, hypothetically. You're talking about this season.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, she could kind of take over the Eric or Jason slot that I think is going to continue for a little while. Well, not Jason. They'll get Jason out of here at any given opportunity because he sucks. But, yeah, she could be the last remaining member of the fans.
Okay. Connor thinks could have made it to mid-merge and been used as a loyal number. That is true. She will go just about anywhere you tell her to. I'm impressed she made it 19 out of 39 days, halfway off her meds. That is incredibly hard.
Yeah.
I don't think she would have won, even if she makes it to the merge, but she could have made it to Final 6, Final 8, given one or two factors as people may be willing to pull her in. And I hope you guys are well and enjoying The Mole Season 1. Did you go and watch any more?
I have not yet, no.
Okay. I did watch the finale, like the final challenge. It's kind of delightful. It doesn't hold up as well as I wanted to, but it is quite delightful. Okay. Moving on to Josh. Josh says, it's interesting that Amy was trying to use Cerie's own 3-2-1 plan that took out Courtney in Panama against her.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I do always find symmetry in returning player seasons interesting. Kathy, like we said, Kathy's mental condition was much worse than what we saw. Kathy has said she thinks they would have ejected her for mental health reasons if she didn't quit. I also think Jeff's response to a person quitting depends on the following two factors. One, is the person in clear physical or mental pain? When you have someone like Austin, who on the surface seems fine, Jeff gets madder than if they're breaking down in the fetal position.
Sure, fair enough.
Two, are they the star power in the season? Jeff pretty clearly knows as the game is playing out who the stars will be. If the person quitting is going to save a star, like Janu saving Stephanie and Palau, then Jeff might be more forgiving. I'm sure Jeff was quite happy that all the original favorites got to move one round further in the game for free.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I get that. Also, from Josh, I do think Amy just caught two massively unlucky breaks with Fair Play and Chet asking to be voted out. If either of them stays in the game, her alliance takes control and the entire season plays out differently.
Yeah, Amy's one of the unluckiest players I can remember in terms of that. Like, we've had things like Michelle and Fiji where it's like, oh yeah, a thing the show did that made it very, very difficult on you. This is just a bad break with two players having injuries, frankly.
Yeah. I think everyone on this cast is playing so strategically that someone like Amanda, who's naturally more reserved, comes off as playing less strategically than she actually is.
And we get a little bit of that this episode, actually.
Mm-hmm. Starting with Eliza becoming the first juror next episode, the online web series Ponderosa begins.
Interesting.
Yeah, Ponderosa
videos.
What is
that?
Ponderosa videos are usually 10 to 15 minutes videos detailing the juror's immediate reaction to being voted out and seeing the juror's debrief after the most recent tribal council. You also see the social dynamics of the jury and see them just hang out. I'll try and send a clip or summarize if anything interesting happens. So yeah, this is where the Ponderosa term comes from.
Oh, okay.
Is the actual web series that they're like, all right, let's show what's going on here.
Okay. Eliza's the first person to ever get their own filmed Ponderosas. Interesting. Fun fact.
Yeah. From Carl. Carl's episode 7 email. Picture the episode. It's Eric looking up to the sky.
Looking up at his god, Ozzy.
Daddy Ozzy.
Godzy.
Godzy. Notes. On Survivor Sucks, there was a widespread spoiler provided by somebody who ended up being right about a lot of things that there would be someone who would try to chop off her own hand and leave the game. They weren't entirely wrong. Kathy was in such a bad state that she did actually threaten to cut her fingers off so she would get medevaced. She wanted to leave the game right then and there, and she was afraid that she wouldn't be able to quit until the next tribal. there was a big intervention where the producer stepped in and said, hey, don't do that.
That explains a lot of why Jeff is like, hey, bud, you ready to get on the boat with me? Like, he's like, I was like, Jeff knows that something's not right. And yeah, that makes a lot more sense.
Don't do that. We'll let you quit, I swear. Apparently, it was much scarier scene in real life than what you see on the show. Man. Forget if this detail was provided earlier, but Kathy hadn't been 100% honest with producers regarding the med she was on. Yep.
Right.
Regardless, I've heard the producers actually made an exception for her in that they didn't make her stay for the pre-jury trip, and they instead let her go home right away with the caveat that she couldn't leave the house until filming was done.
Okay.
That's good. I think that's a smart thing to do.
Good compromise.
Yeah. But then in her AMA, she mentioned some stuff from Loser Lodge, so I'm not sure what the full picture is here exactly.
It could have been a couple days for them to arrange travel and all that, too. Or, like, people told her stuff.
That's kind of what I'm guessing. There was still some backlash to her quit. The I wouldn't have wasted a spot if they casted me type stuff. Although, I wouldn't say it was as bad as Austin. Although, Jared mentions how Jeff has evolved in his treatment of quitters and that he treats women way differently than men. I'm more with him on the second point because I'm remembering how he acted six episodes ago with Johnny Fairplay.
Yeah, he also just fucking hates Johnny Fairplay as a person.
He does.
And from everything we've seen, from like a quarter way into Pearl Islands through behind the scenes and leading up to that episode, is Jeff just barely tolerating Fairplay at all.
Yeah. Still Crazy Kathy, as people started calling her. Crazy Old Maurice.
No.
Have you seen that meme of Crazy Old Maurice? He's been raving all night. And then they go like, he's waving around glow sticks.
No, but I love that. I can put it together in my head, and that's a great meme.
It's great. As people started calling her, and she has called herself, has a good sense of humor about the whole thing to this day. That's good. Honestly, it was your situation. I'm glad you've recovered and that you can look back on it and be like, yeah, that was bad. That was rough.
Yeah.
I'm good now. Oh. Apparently, Tracy had been told on day one that her, Chet, and Kathy were on the outs because of their age and that they'd be voted out one by one. I guess the fans thought, hey, this worked out for Aris, but yeah, she pretty much universally viewed as underrated. Tracy is.
So at that point, she's appropriately rated.
Oh.
If everyone says she's underrated, then she's just rated.
I have a message from Jewberry from Reddit. Hi, I absolutely love the podcast, and you've been mentioning the meme with the endless challenge instructions on a couple of episodes recently. Someone else probably got to it first, but in case they didn't, here it is. So Jewberry sent me a different version of, I think it's the same meme, same idea, but it's the Pearl Islands cast, so we're gonna pause and we're gonna listen to this right now. It's pretty good.
So that one took a slightly different approach.
Yeah.
The other one was an infinite loop and going back to the same, like, Corrine down the track, and everything led back to the track.
It memeified it more.
Yes. This one was them combining like six different challenge instructions into one forever challenge and splicing in cast reactions that were hilarious, of like Johnny Fairplay being like, come on, man. Or like a couple of the contestants whose names I don't remember anymore.
I remember Burton, like, yes, being like, yeah, all right, challenge.
I could watch those all day.
They're
just so dumb.
Funny. They're so dumb and so funny,
and it comes from a kernel of truth, because sometimes you get a really complex challenge and you're like, Jeff, you've been talking for a while, my dude.
Yeah, this one, I wasn't outwardly laughing as much, but it definitely had the, oh my god, this is almost, like, how well it's spliced together. You're like, this could be a thing.
I think if somebody was trying to, like, break me from a serious face into laughing, like, all they'd have to say is, all right, today's challenge is pretty simple, and I would think of these videos and I would laugh immediately.
Beautiful. All right, that's all of our emails. Anything you want to say before we get into it?
Let it rip.
Oh, Beyblade, all right. Bumper. Did you own a Beyblade?
Yeah.
Did you actually?
Yeah, I fought Beyblades in, like, we had this bowl on the playground, this like big like metal bowl thing that like kids could sit in and like spin, because playground equipment in the 90s was made to kill children.
Yeah.
And we would just use that as a Beyblade arena.
Oh shit, that's awesome.
It ripped.
Yes.
Literally. All right, so this episode came out on April 10th of 2008. A couple things I picked up in the week between episodes. Raid on Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints owned YFZ Ranch in Texas. 401 children and 133 women taken into state custody. So like a Waco type. Well, no, because Waco was really bad. They were like shooting at people. Breaking up a cult, yeah. Basically. Not saying that the Jesus Christ Church of Latter-day Saints is a cult, but this one...
raided the Mormons.
This specific compound probably was.
Anytime you have to use the word compound, that makes me go, okay, we might have a problem here.
Yeah. And the construction of the world's first building to integrate wind turbines completes in Bahrain.
All right.
I think I said that correctly. We had two different songs that were number one on the charts. One of them for like a day.
Oh, got it.
Bleeding Love by Leona Lewis.
Yeah.
Was the one for like a day.
I remember that one.
And then Touch My Body by Mariah Carey.
Touch my body.
Touch my body. What a ridiculous song.
Bleeding Love, admittedly a better song. Touch My Body, funny.
Yeah, and better for the radio. Like, yeah,
it's not a ballad.
Yeah, it's not a ballad. The top five movies were The Ruins, Horton Hears a Who, Leatherheads, Nim's Island, and number one in the movie we'll be talking about, 21. Steven, are you familiar with 21?
Yes, this is a poker game. Is this Jesse Eisenberg?
Well, I don't think it's poker. I'm pretty sure it's blackjack.
Sorry, you're right. Yeah. Yes, blackjack, Jesse Eisenberg.
Jim Sturgis.
But damn it.
You're missing on all of it. Ben Campbell, Jim Sturgis, a brilliant student at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, needs some quick cash to pay his tuition bills. He joins a group of students who, under the leadership of unorthodox professor Mickey Rosa, Kevin Spacey, use their math skills to win big in Las Vegas. Seduced by a beautiful teammate, Kate Bosworth, and loads of money, Ben learns that the stakes are higher than he ever imagined when he crosses paths with casino enforcer Cole Williams, Lawrence Fishburne. What do you think this rate on Rotten Tomatoes, Steven?
I think that this was a good movie. It popularized a lot of things that are interesting. Like, it, if I remember right, it shone to light the Monty Hall problem. There's like a big scene about him learning about the Monty Hall problem.
Do you probably know what
Monty Hall is?
Yeah. Yeah. I know the thing where it's like, hey, if you take a thing with a 1/3 chance and
then they shrink it to a half chance.
You do a half chance and you should always switch because if you take the one that they left, you have a half chance versus the third you originally had.
Yeah.
Or fourth or, you know, whatever it is.
Which is bonkers to me.
Which I think I do subscribe to the Monty Hall theory. Like, I do think you should always swap, but that's just me.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about vibes, right? If you're going for math entirely, then yeah, you have a better chance. But if you're going for like, hey, this is what I chose, and that is what they address, is that they're like, hey.
Trust your gut.
Trust your gut.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't have to trust your gut.
Yeah.
So, yes, I think that this is a decent movie. I'm going to go with a critic score of 78, an audience score of 72.
Well, you'd be wrong, Steven.
Oh, no.
A critic score of 36.
Oh, no.
Audience score a little closer, 66. Okay. It's more like my audiences than critics. 21 could have been a fascinating study had it not supplanted the true story on which it is based with mundane melodrama.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know it was based on a true story.
I didn't either. I mean, it's Counting Cards.
Fair. But, like, the kid MIT tuition, like, thing and like maybe like a group at MIT doing this like sounds like it was a real thing.
Did I tell you I went to the casino recently?
No, you told me you were thinking about it.
I did, and I went and I was like, okay, I have a free night. I've never been to this casino in like downtown Chicago. It's super easy for me to get to. Mm-hmm. I was like, whatever, I got a free night, let's do it. I took $100. Man, I have never been so unlucky at blackjack in my life. I got cleaned out so fast.
Ooh.
I was like, okay. And I can't blame myself because I made every single right call. But when I'm getting flipped 13s and 14s consistently, I'm like, what do you want me to do, man? I only busted once and I still lost every hand.
Oh, man. That sucks.
I didn't lose every hand. I lost most hands.
There is a bus, like a shuttle bus, in my neighborhood or very close to my neighborhood in the little Vietnam side of my neighborhood that just shuttles back and forth to the casino.
bonkers.
For free.
I can see that because even casinos, I like the idea of like skills-based games, but they're not skills-based games. They're the house always wins. I want that on record.
Craps is the closest to 50-50 you can get.
Okay. Walking in a casino always makes me feel a little sad. Just
same.
Looking at people who are just sitting at slots machines and like this is just what they do all the time.
Yeah.
This kind of makes me sad.
Yeah, same.
Like, no, if you're responsible and you do it correctly, like, who am I to tell you what to do with
your money? Specifically the older people that are just chain smoking and pulling the arm or like clicking the button for slots and there's just no life behind their eyes that you're like, woof, man.
The nice thing, since it's in downtown Chicago, no smoking indoors.
That's great.
That's great. That was like an instant win. Unfortunately, because it's in downtown Chicago, the minimums are much higher than I would like to pay.
What were they? I figured like 20?
25 was one of them, and then there was a 15 that I played. And I'm like, but I just want a 5.
I don't think 5s exist anymore, man.
I know, but I just want it to be a 5. I'd play a 10.
I deal with a 10.
10 is nice.
God.
Anyway, that's gambling. Gambling, it's a losing venture.
Gambling, I'm in.
I'm not. But it was, I did it. It was fun for the 30 minutes that I got to play.
Oof, woof.
Woof. Anyway, that's it.
That's it. Into the episode.
Into the episode. Episode 9. I'm in such a hot pickle.
Is this a phrase?
Yeah.
Not just in such a pickle?
Parv says it.
Oh, I know. I know. Sorry. No, I know that it's a quote from Parv, but is it a phrase?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Well, yes, and she's implementing new words.
She's Shakespearing it. She's can't think of a phrase, so makes up a new one.
Hot pickle. I am such a hot pickle.
I thought for sure this quote was going to come from Ozzy because it was like, oh, I got Amanda and I got Alexis. I'm in a like sexy pickle.
Yeah, yeah.
Not just a warm pickle.
Oh, I'm in such a pickle, Rick.
Move on.
Moving on. Jared, tired of my shit today. We start at Malakal and Amanda, you know what? I can't believe a word that Amy said, and we had to do what we had to do.
God, Ozzy has no chill if he feels like somebody has crossed him.
Ozzy's really funny here because he says, she dug her own grave, and if she was just honest with me, I never would have voted for her. And then the immediate next words out of his mouth, she can't play both sides like that. So you're saying that if she would have told you that she was playing both sides at one point, you definitely would not have voted her out. Don't believe it.
Yeah, I don't know if I believe it either. Yeah. Man, he's a vengeful dude.
He's a vengeful dude. And then
it worked for Todd.
It worked for Todd. And then Eric's like, how am I still here? How did I survive that? Man, I just hope for a merge tomorrow.
Do you ever chuckle a little bit when you see Eric pop on the screen and ice cream scooper's there for the first time for the episode and you're like,
that's right. He's an ice cream scooper.
I don't know why it's funny. It's just maybe it's just because he's just so amazed by everything around him and just seems to be kind of out of his depth that that's also funny.
I chuckle about a lot of things about Eric. It's just,
he's a dorky little dude. I love him.
Yeah, he's pretty great for the camera, I'm not gonna lie.
I don't remember if I said this last episode. Amy is the first favorite boot since Yao Man.
That's crazy.
Like, Penner went home, but that was Medivac.
Mm-hmm.
That is pretty nuts.
The favorites are in a position to dominate this game if they so choose.
Yeah, and we'll see, because apparently Eliza had to go this episode.
She gotta go.
She gotta go, apparently. But we'll see how that goes from here on out. I don't imagine many of the fans are lasting that much longer. Is there only... No, there's 4 left.
Yeah, so right now we have Eric, Alexis, Natalie...
Jason. I do think Jason goes home this episode if he doesn't win immunity, but we'll talk about that.
Jason Derulo. Yeah, so we then flip over to Irai. And Eliza's like, I really hope it's Eric. If Eric is gone, then I can use that. I can go final 3 with Jason and Amy. I've bonded with Jason. We both love this game, and apparently we both annoy people.
Eliza, I really like you. I do now question your judgment more than I have before.
Hey, you know what? Use what you got.
I know. Go to the war with the army you got, not the army you want.
If no one's willing to work with her, Jason's there.
What a sad state of affairs where Jason is your closest ally.
And it's not like she's not trying to work her way back in with the favorites, but
it's true.
The favorites don't want anything to do with her.
She seems like the type of person that has a hard time being, like, almost like, I mean, everyone struggles being ostracized, but, like, if people think she's annoying, she just, like, doubles down on it and, like, makes it, like, we see a little bit of her kind of, like, woe is me-ing about it, and James trying to be like, no, it's not like that, and it's an interesting place to be, because it's like, Eliza, you're right, but also stop talking.
I think she has the lawyer mentality where, like, she has to do something about it.
Yeah.
If she, and I was thinking about this before, if she does just shut up and maybe she gets a vote or two further in the game, but she doesn't have any ground anywhere. And like,
is that any better? Really?
Exactly.
No.
Whatever. She made the jury. Let's just let's go for a swing and see what happens.
Oh, I do want to say, like, Amanda's kind of tone deaf in the previous scene where she's talking about, like, I don't know why Amy didn't feel like one of us.
Yes.
Because she was on the bottom and excluded from your alliance and wasn't brought in on any of the moves you guys were making inside of Malakal. Like, do you really not understand, or are you upset that she wasn't keeping to the script that was, you go home once we've gotten rid of everyone else?
This seemed like something that you say to when the person is no longer there. Like, she would not have said this to Amy's face.
I mean, she kind of did, actually.
That's fair. She kind of did. Well, okay.
But it's more of like a save face thing almost, or like a, I don't know, like a, well, we would have included you as long as you were okay with going home. Yeah. As the last, as like when we were down to just our alliance.
Yeah. I don't know.
If you were fine with being on the bottom, there would have been no trouble.
Just seems like a no-win situation for Amy.
Sure. Everything in this season was a no-win situation for Amy.
Yeah. So, also, Jason's like, hey, Eliza, I have the idol. We're in good shape. We got it.
This fucking idiot. I question whether Jamie had thought that that was the real idol, like we talked about. Like,
Jason?
No, in China. Question whether Jamie had thought it was the real idol because, you know, but why not give it a shot, all that kind of stuff. I'm fully on team. Jason 100% believes that is the idol.
He thought it was an idol. 100%.
I mean, we have a whole scene of him being like, oh, correct. He's so confident. There's nothing in his mind that fake idols have been used the last two seasons, at least. How?
The scene, and we'll get to it, really hammers home, like, hey, no, it's an idol. We got it. And Eliza immediately recognizing, it's not the fucking idol. What the fuck?
It's funny because he's the most recent example I can think of, and maybe the strongest one, of the camera does not want him there at all, but he keeps doing things that require him, like the show, to give him some screen time, and they just give him as little as possible.
Yeah.
Like, if Jason wasn't a complete dingus and, like, people liked him and he was actually relevant in this game, like, this would be quite an arc that we've had over probably like three episodes instead of like a couple scenes here or there that lead to this awesome episode.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody wants to talk to him, and we, the audience, don't want to hear from him, because when we do later about him winning, he sucks.
What's the difference between him and Eliza?
Eliza's intelligent and well-spoken and, like, at least a little bit humble, even if she struggles with that, like, interpersonal relationships. We want to root for her as an underdog, whereas Jason is, like, slimy and thinks he's the best and has no tact at all. Like, in jumping ahead, but his confessional to us when he wins is like, yeah, I'm so good. I'm the best. I can just win every immunity from here on out, is like the vibe it gives. And you're like, gross, I don't like you.
Yeah, okay. I'm fair with that analysis.
Would you trust Jason to watch your laptop at a coffee shop while you use the bathroom?
No.
Exactly.
I'd put it in my backpack and take it to the bathroom with me.
I'd go somewhere else if I had to. Like, I'd leave the coffee shop rather than do that.
So then we get a tree mail, and it's basically, get your stuff. We're all going to go meet. And
what could this be?
Yeah,
who's
exactly
to say?
And it's not a go to one beach, go to the other beach. It's go meet in the middle, and then we'll figure it out from there.
If Survivor weren't cowards, they would have done the ambassador retreat again, where they send one person each and have a romantic getaway.
What's the funniest romantic getaway we could have got from this?
Oh, Jason and Ozzy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good. Eric then uses this opportunity before everyone leaves to be like, hey, I'm not going anywhere. I'll work with you to the death, Ozzy. I'll run everything through you and Amanda. And he says to the audience, I'm the monkey and Ozzy is the zookeeper. That's something that you should not admit.
For all of his flaws, Eric understands his position in the game and how to get farther in it right now. Does he have that killer instinct to flip later? I don't think so. But if he does, then this is actually a great move. I also want to say one more ambassador retreat that'd be very funny. Eric and Parv.
Mm.
Parv would eat him alive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or Eric and James.
It'd be the best negotiation of all time.
She would have Eric quitting the game by the end of his own volition, of just like talking him into leaving.
You know what? I think you should just quit right now. You got nowhere to go. Let's just quit. You know what? We'll both quit together right now. He raises his hand to quit. Yeah, he quit. Go get him. Get rid of him. Bye. At IRI, they're also leaving the beach. Parv tells us she's in such a hot pickle right now because she has two alliances. James, Amanda, and Ozzy, and also Alexis, Natalie, and Amanda. So, hey, odds are in my favor, and that's definitely not going to come back to bite me.
Yeah, she says this as a positive, and I guess it is for, like, you control the game kind of a thing, but you took two girls to the same prom, Parv, and the DJ's starting to play some music. You got to figure out what you're doing.
Hell, you took two girls to the same prom, one of which didn't even know you were inviting her.
So this is, this will be interesting to see how Parv navigates this, because if there's somebody in this game who I think can, it is Parv.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. And, Alexis says, hey, if Parv feels favor toward her original people, we're screwed. In talking to Natalie, like, what do we do here? We have to trust in Parv, because if we don't, we're gone.
And what could possibly go wrong with trusting Parv? Admittedly, though, like, in Cook Islands, that wasn't a bad play. Trusting Parv, like, there wasn't anything that she had the intention of stabbing people in the back, but she never went through with it. She never had to. She never really got the opportunity.
Right.
This is a very different Parv, and I don't know that they know that yet.
Parv is hungry.
Parv is hungry. Parv wants that $1 million real fucking bad.
Mm. So then we merge feast. The shot that they use for the merge feast is they're coming in, like, you see the boats coming in, and then they're looking at the food out toward the boats. There are flies all over that food.
Yeah.
And I get that they're going to be flies. Did you have to use that shot?
Well, when you're serving cooked bat, you're going to draw some flies.
I forgot about the bat. Right up until they showed it, it was like, oh, no.
Oh, it's so gross, man. James is biting through it, skin and all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That man tried to tell people that he couldn't, like, tried to put on a show that he couldn't eat the food in the China food challenge to throw it. And
he goes and he eats the bat.
Wow. That, they wouldn't have fallen for that for a second, James.
I mean, the jig was up after that aired anyway. So
well, true. Fair enough, I guess.
He might as well just eat the bat if he wants to eat the bat. Oh, everyone meets. Everyone says hi to each other. Eliza, why no Amy? Where's Amy?
Where's Amy?
Help. And I'm trying to stay positive and have fun, and we're going to stay here tonight. We're going to eat, drink, and be merry, but things aren't looking great for old Eliza here.
Yeah, this whole episode is just Eliza's, like, swan song.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes home, but it doesn't... This feels like dunking on Jason, but she goes home.
Sure.
She pays for Jason's sins.
They dunk on her pretty hard through a lot of this episode.
I disagree, but we'll talk about it as we go.
Maybe just tribal, they try to dunk on her pretty good.
We'll get there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then they have to decide which beach they're going to stay on. And of course they're going to stay on the Malakal beach. It's a better beach. But everyone's like, well, if we would have known that this was going to be the case, we would have just chosen it in the first place and then wouldn't have had to pick everything up, bring it here, and then bring it back.
Yeah, it's funny that they don't just that the show doesn't just listen to the conversations they've had and go, everyone go to the Malakal Beach.
Yep.
Get on over there. Why we're not going to fuck with this. Just go.
Next in my notes is James and the Bat. I want to reference what he calls it. It's like a juicy rabbit.
Oh, we also didn't mention it at the beginning, but Amanda immediately running up and like grapple hugging James is just like, what? At this point, has he just been worn down? And he's like, fine, I hug people now, I guess. That's my thing.
I am the huggy, not the hugger.
It's just so funny that we've heard him mention it on camera so many times, and literally every episode is someone, not just like the way you introduce, you're like, oh, hey, like quick hug, like people like grapple hugging James for multiple seconds.
Maybe you have to. Maybe just like if you get him real fast before he realizes what's going on.
You can't spook him like a rabbit.
Oh, man. This is also funny because Eric decides to name the tribe, like he proposes the name Dabu and tells everyone it means good in Micronesian.
Which, is that even a language?
That's what I was trying to figure out. I don't think so.
I don't think so.
So he's just got everyone eating this from his hand because, like, I don't know, it sounds good. But hell no, I didn't look up Micronesian. I just wanted to name it something funny, like Momo or for Shizzle.
I kind of wish they would have named it for Shizzle.
Oh, there will be stupid tribe merge names. This is kind of funny. To play it off as, no, it's a real thing, and no one catches him.
No, Micronesian is not a single language, but refers to a group of related languages spoken across Micronesia, including Chukis, Marshallese, and it goes on to list a bunch of these.
Yeah.
Yappies is one of them.
Yappies.
Listen, as a yapper, I might speak Yappies.
Yeah, beautiful moment there. And then Ozzy stands up and he's like, hey, let's take a moment. Let's enjoy this. We'll game later.
It seems like people took that in stride.
Yeah.
Which is rare. I feel like other times people have said that, people are still playing the game. I mean, everyone's kind of playing it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, nobody goes off on their own that we see. They just enjoy a feast. I'm sure that that is a very nice reprieve to have if you can trust the people around you to actually do that.
Right. But game never ends. Even when you're not playing, you're making relationships, which is playing.
Speaking of making relationships.
Alexis is cuddling Ozzy, like, the minute they get back to camp. And, boy, this is a beautiful love triangle that is kind of unexpected.
How does one find the confidence and, dare I say, audacity to have a sort of like cuddling? Who knows what was going on between him and Amanda, like when the cameras weren't on them, but like we saw like cuddling, making out, like spending a bunch of time together. They weren't on separate tribes for this. It's not like they were like the tribe swap put them on separate tribes. Like they were together Malakal the entire time.
No.
What?
No, Alexis was on...
No, sorry. Ozzy and Amanda.
Oh, yeah.
And then the minute that Ozzy and Alexis go to exile, they come back, and now he's all over her right in front of Amanda in a game about, like, not getting voted off and not pissing people off to a certain extent. How does one find the audacity?
What do you think happened here? Was this an Alexis like instigating? Was this an Ozzy being like, hey, I had a great time with you on Exile. Let's get a little closer. Let's get to know each other. Or is this a situation where he's like, I don't know, maybe he feels that something's not quite right with him and Amanda anymore? Because
I think it probably happened organically, just in like the mingling. Like it seems like they did connect on Exile.
Yeah.
There's chemistry there. And then, you know, whatever organically happens in the camp. But you have to have that mindset of like, hey, Amanda's right fucking there, man. I don't know how much of this is game and how much of this is just Ozzy fucking around. We'll see. But even if it is just fucking around, like this has game implications.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But Amanda does the thing that I wasn't fully expecting, and it's not like, yeah, fuck Ozzy. It's like, yeah, fuck Alexis.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that Ozzy is trying to play their jealousy off of each other. I don't think that came into his calculations at all.
No, I don't think so either.
But he could benefit from that. It's like when somebody, like, not saying they were in a monogamous relationship or anything like that, but there's, like, when somebody cheats in a monogamous relationship and they don't get mad at the person who cheated, they get mad at the other woman or other man.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are you doing? That person didn't have a commitment with you at all. Get mad at the person that broke your trust.
Nothing more dangerous than a woman scorned.
Yeah, I guess we'll see.
In Survivor? Who wins this?
Who wins what?
This battle of the
Alexis and of between the Alexis Aussie. And Amanda? I think Amanda probably wins it. I mean, just by raw numbers and like having the nuclear missile that is Parv on her side.
That's a good point. Okay. Cool. Then I noted here that they have the green buffs. What do you think of green buff?
They look good.
Yeah, they're fine.
They don't really stick out to me too much.
Mm-hmm. Then Cerise, talking to us, says, this is weird with all these new people. It's like people walked into your home and picked up the remote and started changing the channel. Because people are just, I don't know, taking food. They're setting up their stuff where they want. And she's uncomfortable with that.
I get it. I also get that Cerise's smart enough to not make that a thing. Just to tell us to the camera, like, this is a little weird, but not act like it's weird at all and then get used to it.
Yeah. Ozzy, spot on, says, I think that Jason has the fake idol because just by numbers alone, and it hasn't been played because we're the only tribe that went to tribal council.
Well, and he knows that it's been found.
Yes.
And Jason would have been, like, one of, I think, only two people that had been to exile after him his visits.
Yeah,
so,
odds are incredibly high that it's Jason right now.
Which,
it's poetry in the making, says Ozzy. So then Jason goes off and hides his stick.
It's such a shame that Jason wins this immunity, because I think Jason, like, he wouldn't have had to show it to Eliza, and at Tribal it would have been so much better, because I do think Jason would have been the target this episode for him to play it. And, like, he's such a fucking buffoon. The reaction would have been so much better.
His hubris would have been real good.
Oh, it would have been so good.
So, yeah, he goes and hides the stick. Hopefully he doesn't forget it, he tells us. Oof.
I was wondering if that's what was going to happen, but then I remembered the last time on, or next time on scene from the previous episode. What do they do if somebody loses it? They just lost?
It's just gone.
Fuck you then, I guess. Yeah, all right.
And then Eliza goes on the offensive, tries to kind of woo Parv here a little bit. Like, Amy tried to vote out Ozzy. That's crazy. But I would never do that. I'm loyal to you. I'll stick by you to the end. Like, all of his favorites, all sticking together, right? Parv reads through this like a book.
Parv Regina Georging so strong here in this conversation with Eliza and then with Amanda about Eliza.
Yeah.
There's some real mean girl stuff going on here.
I don't know. Eliza, what do you mean you don't know? just tell me yes or no. We could do this together, or you could tell me no.
Oh, Eliza, I don't know is a no.
That's kind of what that is, yeah. And Parv goes and tells everyone. I think it's hilarious that she's still coming to me and telling me she's loyal. How could anyone be so ridiculous? That was her really choosing her words carefully, because that's not what she wanted to say.
That is not what she wanted to say. There's something that we don't know about this tea between Parv and Eliza, because this is a visceral hatred from Parv. This is intense.
I'm going to say this about Parv, and people may not agree with me. Parv is vicious in like a... I'm trying to think of the best male equivalent that we've seen thus far in the show, whereas if you don't, I mean, kind of Ozzy.
I was gonna say Ozzy, yeah.
Where if I don't like you, I'm not pulling any punches. I will do everything in my power to get rid of you immediately.
It feels like Eliza kicked her dog or something. Like, there's just something deeply personal about the way Parv is going after her.
She holds grudges. She will talk so much shit behind your back. Parv can hit with the best of them.
It's a little hypocritical, though, too. Like, you have an alliance with Alexis and Natalie that is betraying the people, if you went with that side of it, which I don't think she will, but would be betraying the people that you have already made alliances with.
Yeah, sure, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about Eliza right now.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I forgot to mention, too, Jason just sticking his hand in a random hole in the jungle to put this in.
As a choice.
Oh, You don't know what lives in there, my guy. You do not know what lives in that hole.
Where do you think they got the bats?
Oh.
No, a bat wouldn't live there.
I'd chop off my own fingers to get out of there, too. I get it.
So Parv and Amanda are talking, and they're noticing that Eliza is watching. It's like, she's staring at us. Ew, I want her gone.
Again, catty mean girl.
It's pretty catty.
Behavior.
Parv tells Amanda that, hey, we have this alliance, and I kind of also made this other alliance. So, surprise.
That I signed you up for.
Yeah. So, it's us and Alexis and Natalie, and Amanda's pissed.
It's literally like, hey, Amanda, so, hi, bestie, it's been a few days. I just want you to know that I did sign us up for a 30-year mortgage.
Together, I forged your signature and your social security number.
Thankfully, I already knew your social.
Yeah.
Love you.
Amanda's pissed.
Yeah. Like,
I think that this is a bad move, and I do not want to go to Final Three with Alexis, because Alexis is a motivational speaker. She will torch us at Final Three.
Yeah, Alexis should have hid what her job was.
Yeah, probably.
But that's the kind of insight you get as a favorite that you do not have as a fan your first time.
Amanda says I giggle about it with her. It's like, ha, 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 that's awesome. But it's not funny. I'm livid and it leaves me with a lot of questions about Parv.
Yeah, but do you want to be against Parv or do you want to be with Parv?
See, this is interesting with Amanda because this is the second person that she has said that about.
Yeah.
Like, I questioned my relationship with Ozzy. I questioned my relationship with Parv.
I questioned my relationship with Todd.
Oh, yeah. Oh, shit.
And to be fair, except for Ozzy, the other two of those are entirely fair to question your relationship with.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Amanda keeps making deals with devils, huh?
Mm-hmm. Just let's hitch a ride with someone who will do all of the dirty work.
Yeah, I think more so this season than China. She was doing her own dirty work in China, let's be real.
That's fair. So then we get to an immunity challenge. Boy, is this one the one that I was waiting for, because this one gives me nightmares.
Yeah, this is rough. I mean, they did this in Borneo, right?
Not this exactly, I don't believe.
There was a version of this we've seen before.
Maybe we've seen something like this.
Maybe it was Pearl Islands. It was a pre-All-Star season that they did this in. And it was not this effective. Like, the tide rose too quickly. Like, they said at a bad time of day, and it was over super fast.
Mm. No, this was brutal.
This is hard to watch.
So you're in the water, and there is a grate above you. You're not locked in. You're not stuck. But if you choose to leave the grate and your head pops up beyond the boundaries of the gate, you're eliminated. But the tide is rising. It started at about 10 inches. Like, you had plenty of room to fit your whole head. You could just hold on to the grate. And then by 45-ish minutes in, you were left with 2 inches and barely any room to breathe.
I really hope there was a rescue crew, like, just off camera.
You would have had to have a lifeguard or a diver.
I mean, there's people with cameras down there, so at least someone to help out. Because Ozzy gets real close to just drowning here.
And he will do it, too. He pushes himself so hard that, like, no, if I pass out, I pass out. Oh.
Yeah, this gave me claustrophobia. This made me panic for them at some point.
So, yeah, 35 minutes in, Amanda had an oopsie. She just, like, pops her head out accidentally, and Jeff's like, no, you're done. You're out.
Yeah.
But it was at that time where they were starting to have their ears covered. So I'm like, did someone have to, like, go tap her on the shoulder? Because there's not any contestants that would be able to do that.
That's
at that
true.
Point. She was the first one out.
Hmm. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. Then we keep going for a little bit. Parv and Alexis are out. Ceree's out. Ceree actually did much better than I thought she would.
The two people in this season who have voiced that they are not good swimmers are Ceree and James, mm-hmm. and both of them did quite well in this challenge.
And it's not a swimming challenge, but it does relate.
If you know that you're not a good swimmer, your level of panic is going to be higher.
Yes. Yeah. So then we get down to James, Jason, and Ozzy at about the 1 hour mark, and the water is above the grate. So therefore, you have no there is no room.
They're making a straw with their hands, basically, to suck in little bits of water or little bits of air at a time, trying not to get water in there.
Exactly. You're trying your best to prevent water from getting into your mouth while also hoping you can keep air going.
Yeah.
Crazy. It's painful to watch. James drops next, and then Ozzy nearly dies trying to make this work. So, Jason wins.
Yay. The hero of the season, Jason.
Jason Derulo.
God, I do not like him.
So, I did forget to mention that before, Jason and Eliza were talking, like, hey, if I win the immunity, I'll give you the idol.
Right.
And Eliza's like, best alliance ever. This is great.
Well, she deserves better.
Little did we know.
She deserves better.
Jason tells us, I think I dominated this challenge. Like, I don't know about that. Seeing Ozzy's face after it was a reward in itself.
It's just so...
He's cocky. He's...
I know I keep dogging on him, and so I will proceed to do so. It's just... It's very rare for the Shodai people that are unlikable in a way that isn't also good TV. Like, usually when you hate somebody, you want to watch them because they're interesting... Like, you want to hate them. It gets the audience on the side of like, oh yeah, fuck this guy. But he just also, he's bad TV and he sucks.
Yeah.
Which is a rare combination.
Yeah, it's tough. You want something to happen so that, I want him to, as we said before, him to play the stick so that we can catch up with his hubris, but no.
He's kind of... like the worst case scenario for Survivor casting, where he's too good at challenges for a tribe to send him home early, but he's bad TV, so we don't want to show him unless we absolutely have to.
Sure. So Natalie and Alexis go up to Parvs and they're like, hey, all right, who's gone? If not Jason, Jason has immunity. Who do we go? And Parv is all in, like, I want Eliza gone.
And I will say, maybe part of this too is that this vote going after Eliza this hard prolongs Parr from having to make a decision.
That's fair.
She can tell both alliances that she's going after Eliza, and neither of them know that there is another alliance going on because they don't need to.
No.
Everyone's voting for Eliza.
There's still about 2-3 people that she is not in any sort of a tie with, and she makes a joke about that too. I can go with an alliance with these two people too, round out the whole crew.
Oh yeah, where Parv to Amanda, where she was like, yeah, I might as well, at this point, we might as well go make alliances with Jason, Eric, and Eliza as well.
Hilarious. So funny.
Yeah, I mean, she can freely go after Eliza and Jason and maybe Eric, yeah. And nobody's the wiser about the two alliances still.
There's no consequences. So, Eliza is listening this whole time from the bushes, still watching every move from Parv, and she's like, I'm gone. I'm dead. Jason, I need that idol. And Jason's like, yeah, sure. I'll go put it in your bag. Like, just go look at your bag later. Don't even worry about it.
Oh, we didn't mention the immunity necklace. It's a good-looking one.
I disagree.
Really?
I think this looks like something that you could buy at Margaritaville. It's like,
I think both, in my mind, both things are true. It's a good looking Margaritaville necklace.
It's like puka shells and weird tiki heads, but like not even as the focus. They're just kind of spread out through it. I don't like this one.
Okay. I mean, you're probably objectively right, but I saw it. I went, that looks cool.
That's fine.
I'll look at it again next episode. Maybe I'll change my opinion.
Okay. So Jason gets it. And is talking it up like, if we do this, it's the biggest blindside in history. And Eliza says, if I make this right, it might make me more hated than Johnny Fairplay.
I don't know if it would have actually, but she's feeling a lot of negative attention these last 20 days. So I understand jumping to that.
In the immediate, yeah, she's going to be hated by the people around her. In the social Survivor viewers, I don't think she would be hated that way.
No, I think she gained a lot of cred, actually.
Yeah.
I did forget to mention, in the conversation with, like, Parv and Natalie of who to go after, Ceri is in that conversation.
Yes.
Which is interesting, because Ceri's a part of the other alliance.
Ceri's kind of all over the place here.
Ceri is Slenderman?
Well, yeah.
You turn your head and she's over there. Oh. Now you turn your head, she's over there.
But she's not really included in any of Parv's alliances either.
She's a part of the two-couple alliance, remember?
Yes.
And she had that like final three deal with her, Amanda, and Parv.
It's so messy.
I know it is, but from Ceri's point of view, something, either like this is a conversation where it's like, oh, we're telling Natalie this because who cares? It's the whole tribe. We can just tell them where to vote.
Mm-hmm.
Or Ceri's aware of both alliances and doesn't care. Either way is interesting. Well, yeah. The first one's less interesting, but yeah.
The first one's more likely?
The first one's more likely. Yeah. It's true.
Like, all right, everyone's just piling on this person because we don't have to move by alliance dynamics yet.
That's true. I'm probably overreading into that. I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah. And Amanda, talking to Ceri, says, Alexis needs to go now. And Ceri's like, ooh, a little bit of jealousy I see here. As long as it's not me, whatever. I'll vote Alexis. It's the live by the sword, die by the sword.
It's the Sandra approach.
Quote. Yeah. As long as it's not me, let's do it.
She's Amanda's fairy godmother, or like more like nurse from Romeo and Juliet. Of like, what'd I tell you about that boy? What'd I tell you about that boy? He ain't no good.
Natalie and Alexis both swear to tell each other if it's the other person. Like, there's just a moment there. It's not really that important right now. So it's like just a boom. Okay, in, out.
Sure.
And then Eliza looks at her stick.
This entire thing with the idols, like watching a car crash in slow motion over 45 minutes.
Yeah, because she immediately knows. She opens it up and she's like, this isn't it. It's wrapped in a napkin. What the fuck?
For her, it's so obvious that this isn't it that she thinks that Jason is fucking with her.
Yeah.
Because clearly he can't be that stupid. I made an alliance with him on the premise that he's not this stupid. He can't be this stupid.
And yet. So she confronts him. She's like, this isn't the idol. Why would you do this to me? And she's like, yeah, it is. I swear it is. It's a stick. What do you mean? Look at it. Ozzy could have made this in like an hour. It was less than that.
It was like 5 minutes. Well, we don't know how long it was actually, but... Oh. There's also, I think this is in the conversation before, but Jason calls her baby. It's like, so gross.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, he's like, I got you, baby.
That's gross. And then Eliza, with no moves left, is like, should I play it? And she's like, I guess.
Wow.
Oh.
See, I want to say one play Eliza could have done here.
Okay.
She could have pretended like that was the idol and gone, I have a better idea, Jason. Let's fuck with them. You give me the necklace. Then they might not, then, you know, that throws off their entire plan. You still play the idol, but we got votes going everywhere at that point.
You're actually a jump ahead of me. That is something that she talks about in her quarantine questionnaire.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We'll
get to that in a moment. We get to tribal, and this one is pretty scathing tribal. Alexis talks about this is the first time we're seeing each other's skills being merged. There are three skill sets, really: the physical, the social, and the mental skills, and we're judging each other on those. And Ceri takes the moment to be like, yeah, and Alexis is all three. She's a triple threat, just dunking Alexis into the earth
via compliment.
Yeah, it's the killing you with kindness.
Yep,
quite literally here. And Alexis does a good job of downplaying this, like, I'm not too worried. There's plenty of other people who are triple threats. There's a lot of really talented people here, so I'm not the clear and obvious target right now. Anyway. Alexis then pivots to dunking Eliza a little bit. I think Eliza played a great physical game and a mental game, but a very poor social game. And Jeff's like, wait, played?
No, I thought Eliza said that.
Jeff calls her out first.
Okay.
And he's like, I'm sorry, played? And Alexis is like, pardon? What?
Yeah, he's like, you said played, like I'm already gone.
No, and then Eliza jumps in and is like, you said played, as in I'm dead already.
Yeah. It's... Eliza does a good job here with what she has.
Yep.
Because, like, that is damning. That is tough.
Yeah. And then Eliza tries to dig out a little bit. Like, I'm not well-liked here, and that's maybe good. Like, people don't want to take a person that is well-liked to the final three, final two, because the biggest losers are the ones who are playing against someone who is a very good competitor.
Yeah. It's a good case. I also think that she's not just not well-liked, but they know that she's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if it was just getting rid of people who are threats because they're not in a power position and they, you know, whatever, I don't know, just getting rid of people that aren't in the alliances, like, Eric should go home. But Eliza's way more of a threat than Eric is.
Correct.
At least to make a move. Eric probably is more likely to, like, win the game just by being a nice doofus.
Oh, Eric has already said to us, like, I'm just gonna sit here and do what I'm told until I go home.
Yeah. So, you know, you gotta get rid of Eliza in that case.
Yeah.
Knowing that tribals are, like, an hour to 2 hours long, this must be fucking torture when you know that you're going home.
Yeah.
When you know that there is nothing you can do. Oh.
And deciding that she's had enough, Parv jumps in and is like, you were running around, I think you're talking to everyone. I think that you need to go and just be done. And then Jeff piles on. I forget what he said because I didn't write it down. But I don't.
At one point, he calls out her eye roll.
Yes, a little bit.
She rolls her eyes and he's like, Eliza, we can't miss one of your eye rolls, and lets her talk. But yeah, I don't remember. Nothing from Jeff like stuck out to me as like overly like cringy. You know, when Jeff kind of like jumps on and like piles onto people. There's a little bit of it, but nothing. We've seen much worse, I guess.
Yeah. Interesting move here by Jason to try to distance himself a little bit. I don't know if it was on purpose or not, but he's like, nobody came up and talked to me this entire day.
Right? I was like, Eliza did.
Yeah.
Several times.
Was this on purpose?
I think so.
Okay. He's just trying to say, I'm alone. Use me. I'm a free agent. Ha ha.
And I'll still be here tomorrow.
Yeah.
Maybe he, like, everyone knows that Eliza talked to him, but I guess they just don't count her because she's already voted out for all intents and purposes.
Yeah. So then we vote, and Eliza plays the stick. I think we cut out the conversation of this is a stick. Like, I don't think this is actually an idol, but...
Yeah, I was surprised she doesn't say something about, like, hey, I don't think this is it, but I'm going to give it a shot.
I almost guarantee it was cut out because the way that Jason is laughing when... the vote, or when Jeff's like, hey, this isn't an idol, makes me feel like there was preface to this.
Sure.
Yeah.
And we get a little bit of it after when she goes, okay, cool, that's the fake. Knew that.
Correct.
Ozzy got the real one.
She uses this opportunity on the way out to be like, haha, fuck you, Ozzy. And Ozzy just admits it right out the gate. He's like, yeah, I got it.
Well, at that point, like, don't treat people like they're stupid.
No.
There's no one else that could have it. Everyone knows it's Ozzy.
Yep.
The only other person who could have had it was Jason, and we've ruled that out now.
And Jeff makes it really funny because he throws the stick in the fire, and he's like, Jeff, that took hours to make. Don't just throw my creation away.
I feel bad for her here, but it was a strategic move, and I don't think the camera's telling us that Eliza is stupid.
Mm-hmm.
The camera's telling us that Jason is stupid and Eliza's suffering the consequences of Jason being stupid.
So Eliza's voted out on an 8-2 line.
If Jason wasn't stupid, he'd vote for Eliza.
Yes.
Why did you still vote for Ozzy? Because even if that is somehow the real idol, like, one vote would be enough.
Yeah.
And you hide your intentions. So now you've just ostracized yourself even more than you already were.
It's bonkers, man.
He's not good at this game.
He's not good at this game. How do you think Eliza does in Future Survivor?
Man, I feel so bad for her because it just seems like both times she's played now, people don't like her. And I really like Eliza. You really like Eliza. A lot of the listeners really like Eliza, it would seem, from the emails we've gotten. I could understand how maybe she would get on someone's nerves when you're sitting around camp all day, every day with nothing to do. Similar to myself, she seems to be a bit of a yapper. Game recognized game. And I think that when she's at a deficit, she really, really struggles. Mm. When she's behind, she kind of just keeps digging. Like, we saw it a couple of times on the tribes where she's making like passive aggressive comments about her place in the game rather than someone like Ceree who will just sit back and wait for her moment. Like, Eliza's going to keep trying to make moments happen even when the best play is just shut up for a couple days.
Yeah.
So I think she kind of always digs her own grave. She is way better at the challenges than people give her credit for. So I think that she's not usually an early boot, but this is probably the average range for her. I think she might have actually overperformed in Vanuatu. Even though I really like her and I would like to see her win the game, I it seems like the people around her don't want that when they play with her. So we have to take that into account.
Fair. Well, she does not play anymore. This is kind of the end for her. But it's interesting. She is a public defender in New York now.
Oh, cool.
So, like, soon after this, she finishes up all her law school and is, like, going to do everything. And so by now, she has served as a public defender for, like, 15 years in the state of New York, or in New York City, actually.
Oh, okay.
And ran for an elected position during COVID. I forget which one exactly, but she didn't win that one. She does quite a few, like, social media type lawyer videos. She seems quite liberal here. Manhattan DA, that was what she ran for in 2021. Did not win that one.
I do want to say too, Eliza is quite young and, like, still in school during these, like, law school, but still. Eliza today playing, like, with that maturity, is a potential winner. Yeah. Like, depending on how, like, not everybody matures to at this, you know, to be a better Survivor player necessarily, but I could see with her biggest weakness being kind of a hard time reading the room, or, like, being at a position on the bottom, that is something maturity can change quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. I think you would be really interested in some of her videos. They're very TikTokified and, like, this is why you should do this, and, like, this is what it means. Well, like, one of her headlines: cops are the biggest gang in the U.S.
Amen. Especially the NYPD. Jesus.
Yeah, and there's quite a lot of liberal, like, all right, let's dunk Republicans and, like, what you can do to stop Trump and, like, all of those things. So interesting stuff. I'm going to leave it at that. I think Eliza's cool.
I think she is too. I've liked her on both her seasons, and I wish she would have won one or, like, been in the top three.
Yeah. Oh, she does also run The Amazing Race once, so.
Oh, okay.
That's fun. Your protagonist of the episode.
I mean, I think it's Eliza. Like, you could make an argument for Jason, but the camera doesn't want him to be, so he doesn't get it.
Nobody wants him to be.
That's for the best. You could make an argument for Parv, for sure. I think that Parv's the one who... I don't think she's drawing the action of this episode, because she's the one that says, let's get out Eliza, but that's pushing on an open door, it would seem. Like, there's no one fighting for any other vote in this except for Amanda going, I'd like to get rid of Alexis, maybe, but yeah, we got to get rid of Eliza. The story is more, can Eliza save herself with this idol that isn't actually a real idol?
Oof. Wow, Eliza lost 11 pounds during her time in Micronesia. She didn't have 11 pounds to lose.
She wasn't out there that... I mean, that's a long time, I guess. She was 21 days, but still.
Wow.
They seem to be well-fed this season, so that's kind of surprising to me.
Yeah. Also, the Survivor Wiki has to make note that she was in the same starting tribe as Amy Cusack both times she played and outlasted her both times.
That's true. I hope they stayed friends.
I hope so, too. All right. Anything else?
That's it.
Then let's end the episode. Bumper. That'll do it for this episode of the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast. Jared, what would you like to promote?
I guess I'll just promote Nier Automata. I've kind of talked about the beginning of the episode, but it's really fucking good if you haven't played it.
Nice.
It's an action game, if you like character action. I will say I was not doing enough of the side quests early, because I couldn't tell that we were in, like, when I should be doing side quests, like, times. And I was like, oh, I'll keep doing main quests and, like, I'll pick up the side quests, because then main quest things will take me to the area where I do those. And it's like, no, you need to go out and explore on your own, actually.
Sure.
So I ran into some high level enemy walls and definitely got lost on the map a couple times. It's not my favorite map in the world, but great game.
Nice.
I was also ripped to the gills on cold medicine and THC, so that might have had something to do with it. What about you, Steven?
I'm going to promote new season of Survivor coming out this week. We start Survivor 48. If you want to join, I got invited via the Unranked people. Christian is starting a Survivor, what's it called? A fantasy Survivor game.
Yeah, okay.
So if you want to join that fantasy Survivor game, just reach out to me. You got to do it quick, because that starts on Wednesday. So if you're listening to this on Monday and you want to get in before Wednesday, like, let me know. I will hook you up with Christian.
That's cool. Yeah. That'll be really fun. I do get a little bit of dread every time a new Survivor season comes out of like, all right, we're back. We're one further away than we were.
Yeah. Christian did invite you, and then I'm like, he probably will say no. And I was like, yeah.
I can't watch it.
Exactly. That's what I said.
That's our 2029 content, Steven.
We can't waste our 2029 content. For my co-host Jared, this is Steven.
For my host Steven, this is Jared.
Future.
Future.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.